choose your destiny. Flawless victory. Choose your destiny. Flawless victory.
Tonight, JT from Saskatoon and myself will be discussing Mortal Kombat Annihilation, but be warned, this will contain detailed plot spoilers and severe language. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome everyone, once again, to the Hunnic Outcast Mortal Kombat Street Fighter Retro Series. Hunnic Outcast here, and you know what? Destroy all expectations. It is inglorious. You know what? I'm the year 1997. Destroy your franchises. I'll just say it right now. With me, I have JT from Saskatoon. How are you, good sir?
Oh, after tonight, nothing will ever be the same.
Well, we got Avengers tomorrow, so it'll... And we got free comic book day, so it'll start to perk up.
Yeah, don't remind me. I have to miss this year.
Oh, God, that sucks.
Suffice to be said, my inner child's going to be weeping openly all day Saturday.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I'll shoot some pictures. I'm going as Freakazoid.
Nice!
Yes. Last year's Jervis Tetch, this year's Freakazoid, so those are going to be up. But, yeah, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Well, it was 2 years after the last movie. It ended on a cliffhanger. Between 1995 and 1997, we had a third Mortal Kombat arcade sequel. I think the last one, anyway, in arcades. If you count Ultimate Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 3... But that was pretty much it. There were some custom controllers for the fatalities and for the moves. And, of course, in between, we had a Saturday morning cartoon show that had Sonya, Johnny Cage, and Liu Kang kind of acting like the X-Men. Like, they would monitor portals from Outworld into Earthrealm. Yeah.
Defenders of the Realm.
Yeah.
Except Johnny Cage was never in that one.
Well, yes.
Because the lineup, actually, I watched Annihilation, and I watched a bunch of random episodes of Defenders of the Realm that I found on YouTube in preparation for this. The lineup is ostensibly the good guy cast from MK3, as is the plot of the cartoon, and it was Nightwolf, Liu Kang, Katana, Sonya, Jax, Stryker, and Raiden on the good guy's side. And then our usual cast of misfits on the side of Outworld, but no one ever seemed to be working together. It was always just like, oh, here's Shiva, and here's Scorpion, and here's this guy named Kodai, who's totally reptile, except they're not calling him reptile for some reason.
Well, I was also thinking when I got the first movie, they kind of sort of have this, The Journey Begins cartoon, where they mix...
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, I'm not revealing that because I just couldn't. I watched it for, like... the entirety, unfortunately, but yeah, it's got the crappiest of motion capture and animation, and it's just like, I'm not even going to discuss that one. But Defenders of the Realm, I vaguely remember, and then there was Conquest, and then of course we got Legacy, and we will be discussing Legacy, because that makes up for everything up until now. But pretty much in 1997, I'm assuming there weren't multi-year contracts like they are now. So, Bridget Nielsen, I think that's who played Sonya Blade, right?
Yeah.
I could not... I tried to go as deep as I could down the rabbit hole. I don't know why she wasn't brought back for the sequel.
I didn't find any... a lot in regards to that in my own research. But I'm going to almost guarantee... I would almost be... offer the rocks guarantee that money played a big part in that.
Again, I said this last week, and I'll say it again with her. I liked her cameo, whatever it was, in Last Action Hero. I liked that moment where you think she's captured, then she goes, big mistake, and she's beating the crap out of one of the henchmen, and she's still screaming like she's being attacked. Like, I kind of like that with her. But when I saw her in Mortal Kombat for the fifth time, I'm not getting anything out of her but a Barbie doll, and when she tries to have scenes with Johnny Cage right before he's about to fight Goro, I'm not feeling anything with her. I don't know if it was an upgrade, but we haven't seen or heard much of her since, and I know that Cameron Diaz was supposed to be Sonya originally. It would have been interesting, but by 1997, Cameron Diaz was the It Girl, so it's one half dozen of the other, and Lyndon Ashby, who was Johnny Cage, kind of pulled a Rodney Dangerfield, where legend has it Rodney Dangerfield was asked to come back for Caddyshack 2. Well, he looked at the script and he goes, why is Bushwood being turned into a theme park, and threw the script right into the trash can. And Lyndon kind of looked at the script and went, why is Johnny Cage being killed in the first 5 minutes? No matter what, he was going to die. So he said no. And we got, I forget who just kind of looks like him for like 2 minutes, and it doesn't matter because he dies anyway.
Yeah, it's his name's Chris Conrad, who, looking at him in the film, you know, he seems like he would have been a better fit. Like, I love Lyndon Ashby's Johnny Cage, don't get me wrong. But just fit, like, looking at him in, like, the 5 minutes we had him on screen, it almost would have made more sense, because he's that little bit younger, has a little more of that, you know, action hero-y thing going on. So, it could have worked.
A lot of things could have worked. But here's one thing, and I, before everybody brings me the torches and the pitchforks, hear me out again. I have nothing against Christopher Lambert, or Lambert, because he's French. I have nothing against him. But last time, he's Raiden, and in the video games, Raiden is playable. He claims in the Outworld his powers are going to diminish, and yet in Mortal Kombat 2, he's playable. The last movie, he talks and he sounds like Patty or Selma, you know, smoking. That's what he sounded like. And he sits around and he gabs. Well, unfortunately, he was supposed to come back, but instead, you know, he's working on Beowulf, which would come out 2 years later. So now we get Darth Maul. Now, what's great about this upgrade is that not only is the voice not synthesized, but Raiden actually fights. Now, there's a lot of flipping, and he tries to, you know, do that move from the video game where he just, like, floats at you with his hands in midair. But I feel that this time it's not so much as a stunt show. I feel like Lambert was just there for the paycheck.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit just on that. Just I really enjoyed Lambert's role in the first film. It's just something about the way he his delivery, and it's such a little thing. It's like, the fate of millions depends on you. Sorry. And I know, I just kind of overall, I liked him in the first movie. I mean, anyone who doesn't like, I'm not going to try and pronounce his middle name because I'll probably break my tongue, but Cary Tagawa, who played Shang Tsung, like that, there hasn't, the only most, That's like Christopher Reeve's Superman or RDJ as Iron Man. Like, best casting possible for that.
There's a lot of great casting in the last one. And there's kind of... here's the thing, though. With this one, again, we have Liu Kang. He's back because, you know, what else is, you know, the actor going to do besides Beverly Hills Ninja and God knows what else? Yeah. I said this last time, I said it now, it's Luke Skywalker's son. I'm okay with that. I love the journey that he goes on, but the problem is, last time he was confident, but now he's going against another big bad. And this feels like Star Wars, because, you know, we had Vader, we had the Sorcerer, now we're going to have the Emperor.
Yeah. And it's the weird thing, like, you say, you know, the whole Luke Skywalker's son, and watching this, he almost looks younger than he did in the first movie. And I don't know if it's just the fact that some parents' right group probably complain, is like, he didn't wear a shirt throughout some parts of that movie, and that's wrong. So, like, it's because, and it's such a nitpicky thing for me, like, in the games, he's always shirtless, and then they put him in this sleeveless kimono-looking thing for this movie.
Yeah.
It's just weird. And the not to mention, like, you look at the... And I remember when you spoke about Jax last week. Like, the guy that cast as Jax in here, Lynn Red Williams, the serious military Jax didn't work with the kids. What can we possibly do? Let's give him street Jax. So now we get Lynn Red Williams, who's probably about 4 or 5 inches taller than the actor from the first film. You know, they give him the cyber arms, like in the game, and for some reason he's got to walk around wearing a sleeveless trench coat because it's not quite the Matrix, but for some reason good guys wear trench coats. I liked his Jax well enough. And just, as you know, we'll get over in the plot of it. It's just this film, like the first one, had a lot of the same beats for good and bad. And for good, I would say a lot of the characters have something of an emotional arc. You know, Sonya has to learn how to ask for help. Jax has to realize he doesn't need all this, you know, the accoutrement, the cyber arms, the... Liu Kang has to believe that he is the one, so he was Neo before Keanu was Neo, basically. And the fact that they just kind of cut and pasted the plot from Mortal Kombat 3, I think it's not that they shouldn't have adapted the game, but I've said, it's just what bothers me about the movie as a whole, really, is, and I've said this for years, this movie had all the production value of an episode of Hercules or Xena. Now, there's Mortal Kombat Conquest, you know, the one-season TV show, which was Hercules and Xena, but it was Mortal Kombat, and it was fairly well done. But the CGI is laughable, and I mean, I don't know what you call it when you program CGI in this thing, but it's like when you see... You know, after the Khan, you know, invades Earth and says, you know, 6 days the Earth is finished and our Earth will rest in peace. And they escape and, oh, look, here's our Deus Ex Machina for travel. We don't have portals. We've got giant hamster cages that travel through the Earth propelled by volcanic winds. Okay, I'll buy that. But wouldn't, like, the tightly compressed gases and the heat down there, I don't know, smother anybody traveling in those things?
You were thinking more and acting more rationally in the plot and the props. Here's what I thought, and I hate to bring up something like if we're going to talk about Xena, like from the Simpsons episode where Xena would just go, well, oh, it's a wizard. Or, you know, Bruce Campbell from My Name is Bruce would say, I don't know, you know, blame the writers. I felt that at this point, once the dimensions between Earth and Outworld combined, everything was pretty much, we're not on Earth anymore, we're now combining another dimension. And if you combine another dimension, you're not going by Earth logic, you're going by Outworld's logic. So that's how I got it, because I was a little confused if they were still at the Temple of Light in China, and then once Shao Kahn came through and was possessing and merging the worlds, that's where these balls came from, and they're kind of under the Temple of Light. My other idiotic question is, though, is how you ride these things, because you're telling me two people have to be in the ball, and I'm just going to go out right and say it. These hamster balls are like the fuck balls, because you have to merge your body and gyrate that it looks like, you know, you're humping each other.
Yes. Hard right, you bastard!
Yeah, it's like one, and it's one girl, one guy. And it's just like, okay. And then, of course, you know, it's discussed in dialogue between Jax and Sonya, and, you know. But this whole plot, if there is a plot, yeah, they take it from Mortal Kombat 3, the video game. 2 had higher stakes because it did take place in Outworld. But, again, what was always interesting about the video games is that we would stand around and watch the movie or listen to the story before we put the quarter in. It wasn't just picking your characters, because the characters had interesting mythologies to them. I don't find anything in this other than it's like, forget about everything that happened in the last movie, because Sonya still hasn't learned her lesson. Johnny didn't learn his lesson because he got killed. Liu Kang has lost all his confidence, and Raiden is like, yeah, I'm the protector of Earth, but I don't know why this bond was broken, because somehow there's a loophole that deals with Katana's mother, who's been brought back to life, and I'm assuming that's what it was. Like, she was some sort of loophole to all this.
Yeah, well, from what I remember of the... Because my brother had, like, this art book from Mortal Kombat 3 back in the day, and I remember I've read that thing cover to cover so many times. However, the rules... And I don't think the rules for... Aside from, if you want to invade this realm, you gotta beat 10 generations worth of fighters in Mortal Kombat, and then, you know, here's the keys. Don't let the door hit you on the way in. For she died in Outworld, but her body was buried in on Earth, or in Earthrealm, and Deus Ex Machina? You know, it's something to do with her being buried on Earth and being resurrected on Earth that circumvents the Elder God's rules. And they hinted that more in, like, MK9, like the or as I call it, the Abrams version of Mortal Kombat, because it's kind of like the new Star Trek movies and how they rebooted the timeline a bit. But that's basically as Quan Chi resurrected Sindel on Earth, and that allows Khan to circumnavigate the rules, and, you know, that's how it works. And as much as I like Talia Soto's performance as Katana in the first movie, she's kind of phoning it in this film. Like, mother, you know, you could have... I know you're 10,000 years old and you're kind of a gilf, but you could show a little more emotion if your mother's just come back from the dead. I mean, granted, it's a little more Evil Dead than, you know, Surprise, but... Yeah, I mean, when she... And I can't remember the actress's name to save my life here. Masetta Vander, according to Wikipedia. I've seen her probably in a dozen other things. It just, she walks up in... Well, I'm going to be generous and call it a stripper's uniform.
Yeah.
And just the, you never see her actually scream except for that one sequence where she's blasting the Valley of the Gods or the Temple of the Elder Gods to pieces. You just hear that ungodly shriek whenever she, you know, struts in. And just, you will die. Okay, we get it. You know, that's... They're mortals and they're supposed to die because you're evil. It's... Yeah, it's... See, the main thing I have with this movie, logic-wise, and never mind the hamster cages of death, is... They never... Even in the first... aside... What we got in the first room, in terms of explanation of the rules of how Mortal Kombat works and how you invade a realm, they gave us just enough to kind of move the story forward. You know, we know it's the 10th tournament. We know this is it for Earthrealm if we lose. And that's enough for us to go forward. But they could have had like 2 minutes of expository dialogue to explain how this all worked, like how Khan... Even in the later part of the film, somehow that's when Shinnok is revealed to be the one behind all these shenanigans, and that's when the Elder Gods finally pimp in. And I love how the Elder God of Water and the Elder God of Fire come in, and all they do is put their hands on his shoulders, and he's just like, "Okay, I guess I'm done." Like he didn't even try to like fight back or something.
Nobody does. And I think the reason... Well, first of all, for Katana, this is a model / actress. A model through and through. So I'm not... I mean, the 90s were all about models and athletes wanting to be in the movies. They ruled the earth for that decade. And, I mean, you had Dennis Rodman, you had Cindy Crawford in a movie, you had Claudia Schiffer. I mean, you had all these... model, so I'm not surprised. So when they try to go in and act and have range and they're wooden, I'm not surprised that, especially the new actress who plays Sonya, she's another model. I'm not surprised that everything falls flat when Katana goes mother, and as well as, you know, Sindel. I mean, we're going to get into it, but as for the plot goes, I feel like every time I try to explain the plot, it's like me showing signs of a stroke, but the plot, I guess, is part of Mortal Kombat 3, where, again, the Emperor found a way to say, well, the tournament means nothing, I'm still going to invade Earth, but it's going to be destroyed in 6 days. And apparently, you only have Liu Kang, Katana, well, Johnny Cage has had his neck broken, Sonya and Raiden to fight. They can't. We get some new characters, which are from Mortal Kombat 3. We get, well, Sindel, because she's back. You know, she's resurrected. Yeah. We got Shiva, which is supposed to be Goro's sister, if I'm not too mistaken, right?
Well, she's another... I don't know if they're... I think she's her sister. I'm not sure about that part of the mythology so much, but yeah, I mean, and Shiva... God damn, that was ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying, like, you know, the puppetry and, you know, the voice work of, I think it was Kevin Michael Richardson who did Goro's voice in the first film. I mean, that was really good for 1995, and it still kind of holds up today. But I don't know if it's just the permascowl the actress had in her face or the puppet arms that they had strapped to her sides like that. But I think she looked way too thin to be a Shokan.
Yeah.
But they made her look like she... I mean, there was effort here. I mean, you had, also in that lineup, you had Rain and you had Ermac, which is basically palette swaps of the same costume design.
Yes, I've heard that, yeah. I was wondering, over all these years, what Ermac was. Yeah, it was just... I think there was some sort of programmer, like you said, like with Scorpion or Sub-Zero, where their costumes changed from, like, blue to red or something.
Yeah, I mean, the character in the greater mythology of the games is he's like Legion in Ghost Rider. You know, he's like all these souls that have been, you know, distilled into this one body like this. You had Motaro, who it wasn't it was absolutely horrible. I mean, they tried. I mean, I will give that to them. They tried. But I've heard a couple other podcasts recently talking about Mortal Kombat, you know, because Mortal Kombat X came out, and they're talking about how Motaro is the cheapest boss ever, and guy preaching to the choir here with that one. And then you got, like, I don't think they had... Baraka shows up later, but I don't think he was in this initial lineup. And then there's just the sundry other, you know, martial arts-esque warriors with these weird-looking axe weapons and different, you know, sort of pole arms and such like that, and they go after the Earthrealm fighters, and James Remar, who's the guy who replaced, you know, the Highlander as Raiden, he doesn't do a horrible job, but I have so much love for Christopher Lambert's work with Raiden the first one, because he played it like a god, like he's the protector of the Earthrealm, but he's a god, so he can't fight in the tournament, you know, I can understand that, but Remar's performance, it's so wooden. Like, I know you're supposed to be a god and all that, but he's just so... It just seems like he's got this... The entire telephone pole up his backside, and he can't do too much with his voice and inflection, or lest he hurt himself.
I think that's with the entire cast, though. I mean, I don't think anybody really gives any range, and...
It's either too much range or not enough range.
Yeah, there's nothing in between because, again, I think this was just for Mortal Kombat fans. The way I compare these two movies, and even Street Fighter, is those commercials in the 90s. You have two kids that are bored and they want to play, and then all of a sudden an actor come in, and the kids will go, Johnny Cage, and then he'll shrink down to the figure, and in their imagination, he actually came in, but it's actually, you know... They just got a new toy, and they're playing with it. And I just feel like when I watch these movies, it's a 90-minute toy commercial and video game commercial to promote the product, but these are the actors that they got. They couldn't get any real actors with range because they just wanted to make sure they could do the martial arts, and that's fine. Or they have Sonya, who, you know, is athletic, and she just looks good, and she can do some kicks, and that's good, too. The story, however, as I said, it just, you know, the director for this movie, he just decided that they should go on an adventure and not have a tournament. Now, there's always been a tournament, but, you know, John R. Guarnotti, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, he was the director of photography for the first movie. And usually when you have somebody who's not a director, it's never good. And I think he was trying to work on some 3D shots, because every now and then we have, I think, and we haven't even gotten to two robots. We got Sektor and Smoke, right? Those are the, or Cyrex.
Smoke was the first one we run into where, just to keep everyone up on the plot, so the Earth Realm fighters have escaped underneath the Temple of Light. They've split up, Raiden takes Sonya to find Jax in Hawaii, and Liu Kang, Katana are supposed to go to the Hopi Mesa and find a fan favorite character, Nightwolf, and he's going to prepare Liu Kang, for this new, adventure. And along the way, Liu Kang and Katana are ambushed by one of the first cyber ninjas we see in the movie, which is Smoke, and a bunch of, minions who are dispatched rather quickly, and they take a Smoke almost like they took out Sub-Zero in the first film, except they cut and paste the second version of Sub-Zero from the series into the movie, where it's the younger brother. At first he's wearing the, looks like the traditional Sub-Zero gear, and then he takes the mask off, and he's got the eye scar, and now he looks like Mortal Kombat 3 Sub-Zero, and then they fight Scorpion. This is like one of the first instances of really shitty CGI in this movie, is where the whip tendrils come up out of the smoke or the fog underneath this bridge. And it's just like, they couldn't turn, I know what you call it, the opacity or whatever down, but the CGI is so freaking shiny.
Oh, I thought it was shiny when, actually the minions, I think, sometimes they're called the Elimination Squad, and sometimes they're called the Execution Squad. It depends on how pissed off the PTA is that week.
Yeah.
But
I would have gone goons. Who? Hired goons.
Yeah. But as for the CGI, I think when they're coming down from the portal, and you have, Sektor and Scorpion and Shiva and Montaro coming down through the portal in the opening, that's shitty. Here, when you have Scorpion, because you're right, getting into the rest of the plot right now, where the four have to split up, and Sonya kind of goes to, like, the leftover set of Jurassic Park The Lost World, because it was 1997, and we have Katana and Liu Kang that are still, I guess, in a cavern, and they come across, like, we said, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, who, well, a Scorpion, even though he died in the last movie, well, he's a specter, so he could always come back.
Yeah.
His powers, I keep forgetting he can teleport. I used to play him a lot in the video game, but I just remember him, using the sphere and setting people on fire. I forgot he could also teleport. So, yeah, even when he teleports and he has, like, that purple, Sunny D Delight type of atmosphere, commercial, special effect to kidnap Katana, that makes even less sense, because if she's supposed to be 10,000 years old and she was in the tournament in the last movie, even though she didn't do much, I'm not surprised they made her a damsel in distress. But boy, I'll tell you, even when Sub-Zero has that frozen bridge, and you can tell it feels like, it looks like styrofoam.
Oh, yeah.
And that's breaking, and you can tell they're probably, like, maybe 10 feet above the bridge or whatever. You can almost see the mattress, like, if they fall down that pit.
Yeah. No, that's, like I said, all the production value of an episode of Xena, but in the most negative way possible. The cool thing I found looking up about this film, that when you hear Scorpion's voice, I'm not so sure about the first movie, but Ed Boon did Scorpion's lines, the voiceover word for Scorpion's lines in here. So that's one of the creators of Mortal Kombat going, "Sucker!" when he disappears with Katana. Yeah. And then, what kind of really bothers me about that scene in particular is, like, we get a fairly decent fight between the good and the bad of Mortal Kombat. Like, lifelong enemies, the ninja versus ninja. Using an instrumental version of a song that I knew more is more well known from being from the Matrix soundtrack, which is "Take Me on a Roller Coaster," but they just have, like, the instrumental version here. I dug that, but yeah, it's just, this whole scene's kind of let down. And then Sub-Zero just pimps off to nowhere, and we never see him again, and thought he was going to be, like, one of the defenders of Earth in this one. It's, I guess they couldn't afford any more money for the mid-90s ISIS special effects.
Oh, actually, they couldn't afford most of the actors, and we're going to get into it. We'll be back right after this.
Remote Control is the new TV podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network. We'll be covering TV shows and topics from the year 2000 to whenever now is. We'll have special themed episodes entitled Pilot and Season Premieres, as well as finishing finales. We'll also have Season Pass episodes, where we take a look at an entire season of a TV show. Remote Control can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and www.geekcastradio.com. So tune in, because we are all remote controlled.
Is this thing on? Oh, goody. Why, hello there. It's your dear old Uncle Joker here. I bet you're asking yourself, what could I be possibly doing here, of all places? Well, I'm laughing at the fact that this new podcast presented by Geekcast Radio is called Legends of the Dark Knight. Who the heck knew the Bat was so popular? Ugh! Join Steve, Mike, and sometimes Tara for reviews on the greatest DC animated universe cartoon to ever meet Gotham City. So join moi for the talk of the town, or I'll send Captain Clown after you. He gets mighty angry when he doesn't get to have his garbage skull. So put on a nice big smile and join us for the next Geekcast Radio Network podcast, Legends of the Dark Knight.
A character gets killed off because they couldn't afford the special effect for that character, so we'll get there. But yeah, pretty much Sub-Zero tells Liu Kang, you have to go find Nightwolf, and Liu Kang is pretty much wandering around the desert until he finds him. The other thing that makes little sense, too, is the smoke, I guess, you know, Jax, Sonya fight in the leftover set of Jurassic Park, because they make Jax into the token black guy, which is, you know, he's just going to be the jive turkey, which makes no sense. Because Jax is more than that, and there's a reason why he has the cybernetic arms. Now, originally, it was supposed to be Michael J. White, but instead he got the role for Spawn. I don't know if he, you know, bet on the wrong horse, if he would have been an either or. He does get to play Jax in Legacy, and he nails it. But, again, Jax here is just, you know, he's just saying things for the sake of saying things. And even that explosion between, you know, the two when, you know, smoke goes all Predator. Cyrex. Cyrex, who I might add, if I'm not too mistaken, his fatality in Mortal Kombat 3 is that he just drops a bunch of bombs and blows up the Earth.
Well, he had the bombs, and I think both Ninja, like Sektor and Cyrex, both had the missile. Sektor was the one that had that goddamn, like, he had the net, which is kind of referenced in this scene where Cyrex spits, like, that nano net goo stuff that melts the one Elimination Squad goon.
Yeah.
And that scene, and some really, like I said, okay, we're going to keep referencing this, folks, but weak CGI here for that guy's death, and then the fire effects where we get how they pulled off Sonya's kiss of death in this scene was really well done. Like, she sees they got this powdered crystal stuff that's flammable. Okay, you got this guy that's sitting near sparks and natural gas. Okay, that's cool. And she does that whoosh, and it looks really badass until you see Cyrax on fire and it looks so bad. And then they have the whole, you know, dragon eating its own tail tattoo, you know, poofs nowhere. And they're like, is that what I think of as? Yeah, we should probably run. And then, you know, That was some really bad green screen explosion running away from there. Where I hope they had some really soft mats, because the way you see them go ass over tea kettle when they flip in the air with that explosion, they could have landed and hurt themselves real bad.
Well, you're not too far off. If I understand this correctly, and I do, the mattresses were always there, and you could almost see the lines between the green screen and their costumes. Like, you could almost see the outline. So they were pretty much protected, because I don't think they could afford to have a lawsuit or, you know, an insurance issue. But,
something.
Yeah, but I do know that with the tattoo, they do go into it that it has something to do with safe passage between the two realms. But yeah, then we, of course, have to go back with Liu Kang, and he comes across Nightwolf, and you want to talk about bad special effects. We have Nightwolf that I don't remember too much, only because he was, you know, a Native American shaman, and I always like to play Scorpion and Sub-Zero. But here's what I love. You have a wolf come, and then Liu Kang is pretending to fight with his first-person perspective with the wolf. And then it finally turns into Nightwolf, which makes no sense. And you want to talk about a character who just comes and goes. Nightwolf comes, he says, okay, there are three challenges, and this feels like Empire Strikes Back. It feels like Yoda and Luke Skywalker. Where it's like, okay, yeah.
Mixing in the three challenges from the first movie.
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah, it's like, I know what they are, okay, like, why are you telling me things I know from the last movie? And then Nightwolf is kind of like, okay, well, I'm glad that you have no patience, I'm just going to knock you out and just show you scenes from the last movie, and you're going to turn to, like, some sort of dragon, and that's it. Then he just goes away. We don't know what happens to Nightwolf. Now, Nightwolf, if I'm not too mistaken, is a Native American shaman. He's basically known, well, it is a real-life Native American. The guy's name is Lightfoot. The last time I saw him was the movie Indian in the Cupboard.
Have you ever seen Call the Conqueror?
As a matter of fact, I have, yes.
He was Escalante.
Yes, I figured he looked familiar in that, yes.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't get, though, is that when I saw this movie in theaters, like the first movie, the audience was a little bit younger, but, you know, the fans were like, Nightwolf, Jade, and it's like, people were saying the same things like, okay, we got Nightwolf, where'd he go? He just, like, disappeared. And then we get Jade, and, well, Jade is pretty much, we know what Jade is all about. And she just, all of a sudden we're in the desert, it turns snowy, she's in a bikini, and she's, I guess, trying to declare her love for Liu Kang, and he's like, but my heart belongs to Katana, even though we don't know why. And she smacks him and goes, oh, I was just testing you. Okay. Again, what was the purpose of having Jade in there, other than she's some sort of spy? Or, because if you're not a fan of hers, and I don't really remember too much about Jade, other than she seems to be like another Katana or Melina, the whole scene is useless.
Yeah, I mean, Jade in the original games, she was one of the court assassins or something in Shao Kahn's, retinue. And I mean, this one, she's there to tempt Liu Kang, you know, seduce him to the dark side, and is like, honey, you're attractive, but you're no Katana, you know. I mean, she is very free. I'm just saying, you know, if it was her or Talia Soto, I'd go to the Bond girl.
I would actually go with, I don't know why, a toss-up between Shiva or Sindel in this movie. But, again, since this movie is taking parts of Empire Strikes Back, it also seems to be taking parts of Superman 2, because we have Raiden who meets with the gods. And just like Superman 2, it's a Fortress of Solitude, and Raiden is asking the gods questions that we pretty much know the answers to. Why has the treaty been broken, or, like, why has the tournament been broken so, you know, the Emperor could take over the world, and
yeah,
he's pretty much...
It makes no sense. I mean, the Elder Gods, you know, there's Elder Gods, there's Cthulhu, and then there's these guys who, ostensibly, they're good. You know, they set up the Mortal Kombat tournament to, these are the rules, follow the rules, or we will pimp slap you to death. You know, for lack of a better turn of phrase. And he's like, he's Raiden straight out, like you say, he's straight out asks him, why did you allow this to happen? We do not meddle in the affairs of mortals. Okay, that's your purview, that's cool. But the rules he laid down have been broken. And up until Shinnok Force Lightning's Luke, my god, he is the friggin' Emperor, where he starts shooting, like, essentially Force Lightning at Liu Kang, you know, right before they're like, oh, crap, hands on my shoulders, I won weakness. First of all, weak sauce, and for the character, I mean, what the hell? But yeah, he asks them what's going on, you get the three questions, they give him some cryptic clues, and by this time, Sonya has fought Melina, who... You do get a couple of good looks at the actress who's in this, you know, pink and black unitard with a mask over her face. She doesn't look one whit like Talia Soto. You know, she's taken out. Extermination Squad comes up. So the next time we see Raiden after all that, you know, Liu Kang and Jade have come on. After Liu Kang's got his little bit of, you know, unleash your animality training from Nightwolf, which, again, the morphing effect from Wolf to Nightwolf, I saw better werewolf effects in An American Werewolf in Paris. And I hate that movie.
Yeah, I like to pretend that sequel never happened. But, again, Melina, if my memory serves me correctly, and it does, is that the reason why she wears the veil is that, on one hand with the mythology, she may or may not be the half-sister or the birth-sister to Kitana. And then she's a clone. And then her fatality is when she takes off the veil, she kind of has... you know, the head of Baraka, which is a demon from Outworld. And she's known for sucking, you know, her opponents in, spitting out their bones. Here, she just shows up for this... She never takes off the veil. She just shows up, and while Sonya and Jax are walking around the desert doing God knows what, and Sonya's like, Kitana? And Melina goes, you wish. And they just fight for the sake of fighting.
And one of the worst... Foley sound effects in this entire movie. They are clearly in the middle of a muddy patch somewhere in this desert. There is no way that she hits some solid rock into that mud when she sticks her size into the ground. You hear that ting. I was like, I call bullshit on that. I've made more realistic sound effects just singing in the shower. I'm just saying.
I think it's just because... I'm going to blame the budget on all this. In the last movie, the budget was $18 million. Here, it kind of gotten doubled. Well, not doubled. They added an extra $12 million, so now the budget's $30 million. You can't tell me that with $30 million, you couldn't have better special effects. I don't know what it was blown on for marketing, for salaries for the actors. But
hookers and blow.
Yeah, it had to be because... The sound effects, and of course them fighting in mud, well, that's something for the older fans. And unfortunately, when I was in the theater, I was in, like, the first several rows back, sitting in the middle, and a lot of parents brought their kids, because the first movie and the first three video games, or at this point, four video games, was for an older crowd. Somehow, little kids got their hands on the games and parents took them. Apparently, the parents were this oblivious. I mean, I can understand if Uncle Joe, you know, the black sheep of the family, wants to take the kid. But when you have the parents come, and they don't realize what's going on until, like, 40 minutes in, and they see, like, two women fighting in mud, and this is when they get offended. And, you know, Jax goes, oh, you look good in mud. And they start to, like, I have to keep picking myself up, like, every 5 minutes because parents are getting angry and taking their kids out. I don't think anybody knew... who or what this movie was supposed to belong to. And this is before people were complaining in the 21st century where we're just cramming effects and we're cramming references. This movie, just like Melina, you know, the chick that looks like, you know, Kitana. Melina comes out of nowhere, fights, and goes away. And then, of course, like we said, with Raiden, it's Superman 2 where he meets with the gods in the Fortress of Solitude. He gives up his powers. He flips out of nowhere, and he has his new garb from, I guess, the sequels. And his argument is, never give up hope. Even though nobody has a plan on how they're going to fight the Emperor, because Liu Kang, I guess, was unconscious, you know, watching clips from the last movie. Jax and Sonya, you know, they have no idea where they were supposed to meet up with. And Kitana's just in a cage somewhere, like, you know, Princess Peach. And Jade, we don't know what side she's on if you're not familiar with this character. So, all of a sudden, for argument's sake, when they find out about the tattoos, it's safe passage, and we find out that Raiden and Shao Kahn are not only gods, but they're brothers. And apparently, Raiden admits that he gave up his godlike powers and became mortal because, you know, the gods are just making up things as we go along. I guess pretty much the budget also must have been, you know, blown on a scriptwriter. I think everybody just, like, picked up Mad Libs and just went, okay, adjective, gods, adverb, you know, whatever, temple of light, you know. Nobody knew what was going on. I think people were just, like, walking along and making up whatever they wanted just to shut the fans up. But we get to Liu Kang saving Katana, who's hovered in a cage somewhere, and this is where Shiva dies, because they couldn't afford her special effects anymore. Now, Shiva, again, this is an important character. For argument's sake, she may be a blood relative to Goro. She's the person who, if Johnny Cage killed Goro in the last movie, you would figure they're going to battle and she's going to get her revenge. No. She just gets squashed by a cage. Baraka shows up, who's also this demon from Outworld that has the blades that can cut your head off. But he kind of comes and goes. So, that's pretty much more filler. Then, of course, we get to Sindel, who's just lying on a slab somewhere, and Raiden's like, well, your love can snap her out of it and break the spell. No, that was just bullshit, and she turns into Wonder Woman and goes away. And then all of a sudden, Raiden's like, okay, you have to defeat Shao Kahn, that's the only way. And Liu Kang's like, what? Like, because there's no real battle plan, there's no, you know, they're just going to walk up and fight. So I guess we might as well get to, like, the end part, which is, there's nothing else. It's, I guess Sonya fights Ermac, right? Is the Red Ninja? Well,
yeah, it's, I mean, because I just watched this movie this afternoon, again, to just keep it fresh in my mind. We get to the big climactic fight scene, you know, Sonya's fighting Ermac, Motaro versus Jax, Sindel versus Katana. Raiden goes to, you know, fight Shao Kahn, who, spoilers, the film's almost 20 years old, so that's not even necessary. Shao Kahn and Raiden are brothers, and Shinnok's their dad, and that's another thing that really bugged me about this movie. Whereas the first film teased a lot in terms of the mythology of the show, but they used what fans knew and loved about the game. In this one, they took that mythology and they tried to prop it up with more and all this extra info and all that, and it's just like, blah. I mean, in the game series, Shinnok is like one of the more, I'm not saying brilliant villains, but he's one of the more powerful villains in the franchise. And he's definitely more powerful than Shao Kahn in the games, but he was never ever said that he was Shao Kahn's father. I mean, Shao Kahn is unto like a god himself in the games on her own. And just the hell, but yeah, so Raiden goes to face Shao Kahn. Shao Kahn, I forget if he gives him the shadow dash, or he gives him like his little, you know, death Hadouken move, but he more or less I try not to swear too much when I record, but he fucks Raiden's shit up. And then it's Shao Kahn versus Liu Kang, and you know, we get Mortal Kombat, you know, we get the song, which to this day I still love.
It's the only thing that holds up anymore in this franchise.
Well, I'd say that song and Robin Shu, because I mean, I've seen a lot of the other stuff he's been in, like Beverly Hills Ninja and his appearance in the Dead or Alive movie and, you know, in Death Race and all that. But, I mean, you got the Sindel Katana fight it's not even a fight. It's like two or three hits and Katana gets Sindel locked into like an arm bar restrains her and just holds her down. Jax gets one of his arms messed up, like his, the bionic sheath, and then you see that thing where he finally clicks. You almost hear the click in his brain. And he rips the other arm off. And he's like, "Got all I need right here." And I still think, as bad as the movie is, I think it's kind of badass where he lays out Motaro. I mean, this guy's got a dragon's tail with this 9 flavors of pain with the tail on it, and he still manages to take him out. You know, Sonya, this is one of the cool things. One of the hidden characters in the game is Noob Saibot, which, if you don't know, is the last names of the creators, John, Tobias, and Ed Boon, reverse like that. You know, he pours out of Ermac, and they both start ganging up on Sonya, and then Jax, you know, pops in, and Sonya takes them all out, and it's like, got your confidence back. Finally learned how to ask for help, and their emotional journey is over. And we go to Liu Kang and Shao Kahn, and Shao Kahn works Liu Kang. And you know how I said this movie has had all the production value of an episode of Xena? Well, when Liu Kang finally loses his animality, I've seen better CGI animation in the first season of Reboot. I mean, this dragon looks like they're trying to CGI up an homage to a Ray Harryhausen monster or something, but it's stiff and it's slow moving and it's... I'm not... Even when I first saw this movie in the theaters, when it opened back, like 20 years ago, I looked at this dragon and it was like, oh, who's a cute fire-breathing beast of burden? You know, it just looks so bad.
You know what? Here's the thing, though. I have this on Blu-ray, and I've watched this on standard. The biggest thing that I've noticed is this last fight sequence between these four characters against the other four. I can never tell who's beating who. You have a better eye than I do. I've tried to look it up close. Even with the Blu-ray transfer, it's still one of the worst transfers. The lighting is shit. And as for the CGI between the two dragons, I noticed that with Liu Kang, he's going to turn into the green one because that's what he did in the video game. It was his animality. But yeah, when Shao Kahn turns into a dragon and he's going to turn to, like, you know...
He turned into a Hydra, I think.
Yeah, Ghidra. He turned into King Ghidra, or Ghidorah.
Basically.
You know? Yeah. I knew that, again, they're going to use the budget as an excuse, and they're also going to do it where they're not going to make it too scary not to scare the crap out of kids. This was 1997, after all. I mean, I'm only going to say that, and I felt that they tried their best with whatever production values they had, but to have these two dragons fight, it made zero sense, especially when Liu Kang is getting his ass kicked every 5 seconds. Somehow, the gods come out of nowhere and Shinnok goes, do I have to do everything? And the gods go, okay, this will be decided finally under Mortal Kombat, and we get the techno, but then 30 seconds into it, because I guess, you know, they couldn't afford too much with the Immortals like they did the last time where they played the techno music all over the place. Here, they play for like 30 seconds, and Shao Kahn is beating the crap out of Liu Kang, and then all of a sudden Liu Kang turns into a dragon, Shao Kahn turns into a dragon, somehow they go back to fighting again, and Liu Kang somehow wins, and Shinnok is turned into a Rubik's Cube Phantom Zone thing, and just goes away. And somehow, you know, Sonya does what she did in the last movie, where she uses her ankles to break the guy's neck, and somehow, you know, Jax is able to beat the crap out of Motaro. Now, Motaro, we haven't given him much credit, because the credit with Motaro is, in the video game, he's a centaur, dragon tail, and he's also the hardest character. It's kind of like with Goro or Kataro, which is, I think, Goro's father, the half-man, half-tiger, or even Shiva. You can't just attack him head-on, because he is a centaur, and he does leap, and he does use his hooves to take out a lot of your energy. I know this, and I've tried to beat Motaro several times. He's a playable character. I do know that in the third sequel, which is Mortal Kombat 4, they took, or I think it was Armageddon, it was one of those. He's playable, and they took away his hind legs, and his fatality is he just pretty much grabs you and tears you to pieces. He's an interesting character. I enjoy him. I'm glad they put him in the game and in the movie. I mean, a centaur is awesome. The problem that I have with this is that they don't have much character development. I know there seems to be some sort of Megatron Starscream going on between Mataro and Shiva, because Shiva wants to be a general. Mataro does not get along with Shiva for whatever reason. He wants to be general. They give it to Sindel, but Mataro wants to prove himself, and we never really see a payoff between a Shiva. Mataro fights just for the sake of them fighting, and then when Mataro does fight Jax, I can never tell really who's beating who, because even with the Blu-ray transfer, it's still dark and shitty lighting, and I can never, all of a sudden it's like, we're going from like a three-ring circus or a four-ring circus, Mataro, Sindel, and then Ermac and Sonya, and we're, you know, all of a sudden it's like, well, the music has changed, and now everybody's won, everything's back to normal. Raiden, as we said, dies, and he gives one of the most cheesy... This is almost like 2 years before South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, where the mole is singing before he dies, if you remember that character. Yeah, Raiden is kind of like, well, I die, but at least I die mortal. And then all of a sudden, after this fight sequence stops and Liu Kang wins, you want to talk about shitty special effects. It feels like somebody is off-screen playing with a light switch, and we get stock footage of, like, the Eiffel Tower was in the desert, but now it's back in Paris. There's a freeway that is in the desert, but now it's back in San Francisco. It's like everything is going back to normal, and then Jax and Sonya just high-five each other, and then Sonya's like, oh my god, what the hell is that? Like, that's her line read. And apparently the gods show out of nowhere, and Raiden's like, oh, I died? I'm okay? And the gods are like, well, you can have your powers back now, and you can be a god again. I'm like,
cool.
What? Hold on. First, he's a god, but he has limitations. And if he goes to Outworld, he can't use them. So all he can do is really talk and observe, but then in the sequel, that's thrown out. Then he's tested. Then his powers are taken away because it's a sequel, so it's Superman 2 where, you know, my powers are a curse, but now they're not. And then I die, but then I come back like Jesus, but I'm a god again, so I have to leave and go God knows where because I'm a god, and Liu Kang, Sonya, Catania, and Jax, you're a family now, and that's it. I'm like, what? And this is where I just walked out of the screen and never played Mortal Kombat for a very, very long time, other than this reboot that came out, and I watched Legacy the other day. This movie is, without a shadow of a doubt... Oh, I guess we should get into ratings at this point. What would you rate this? Like, 0 being the lowest, 5 being the highest. How would you rate this piece of shit?
Only because of how long I've steeped myself in the lore of this franchise, I'm going to be what I feel is extremely generous and give it a 3. It's cheesy, it's ill-made, it's better than it has any right to be in some respects. But it's one of those movies that, as long as you know it's a bad film, there's stuff to be enjoyed. I mean, it's got decent fight choreography for most of the fights. It's a continuation of the best video game movie ever, and I defy you to find a better video game movie than the original Mortal Kombat. And I'm gonna give it a 3. Like, I got a lot of love for the franchise, and outside of The Journey Begins, which is the absolute worst piece of Mortal Kombat media out there, I still kind of enjoy it. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a 3. I feel it's a little more than it actually deserves, but god damn it, it's Mortal Kombat, and I love it.
Well, then you haven't seen the stunt show. And speaking of stunt show, I feel like when I watch these first two movies, I'm standing online watching the queue on the overhead monitors right before I'm about to enter the ride. The thing is this better as a video game or a movie, because the characters have interesting mythologies to them, and they have interesting backgrounds and stories. And with Legacy, they talk about Sub-Zeros and Scorpions a lot. And I feel that they are memorable characters, and they're always going to go on that journey, but do they work in a tournament or an adventure setting? Well, we know that Sub-Zero had his own video game, and the less we talk about that, the better. But I will say one thing. This movie has shitty special effects. I was never bored. This movie has flatter dialogue than it did in the last movie, but I was never bored. This movie has horrible chemistry with one another, with the actors, like with Johnny Cage, with Katana, or, you know, Raiden, with Jax, or, you know, the chemistry is horrible with all these actors, but I was never bored. Shinnok, I was hoping to see a little bit more of him, and I think it was stupid how he goes away. He turns into a Rubik's Cube character type of thing when he's, when Shao Kahn is defeated, but I was never bored, and Shao Kahn really, between him and Sindel, I mean, Sindel, her meme is always going to be her turn into Wonder Woman, and yet, I was never bored. The worst video game movie I think that's out there is probably a tie between Silent Hill or Double Dragon. You would think it would be Super Mario Brothers, but I'll get there one day. In the meantime, these movies are guilty pleasures, so this one actually gets a 3.5. It works if you're playing a video game and you keep this on in the background and you're playing an RPG where you're leveling up and you just want background noise, or, you know, this movie is on late at night. It's a grindhouse movie where 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, it had been on TNT a lot in the late 90s and early 2000s and even on Stars. So I was never bored, but professionally, I don't even know where to begin with this, but the only thing that's always going to save this franchise's rear end will be the video game, the mythology of the characters, and, well, as I said, you're not going to waste your money watching Legacy. You may be a little bit confused with the cast change in Legacy 2, but at the end of the day, I don't have buyer's remorse because both these movies on Blu-ray came out to be a total of $5. So it's money well spent. So JT, where can the good people find you?
Well, they can find me every other week or so on the Comic Connoisseurs podcast I do with my friend Ben, the host. He's one half of the hosts of Animation Aficionados. I'm working to bring my own podcast back, Authentic Geek, sometime in the near future. And more on that as it develops. If you're looking for me, I'm on the Twitter at JT from Saskatoon. And that's pretty much all I got right now.
For me, HunnickFeedback@gmail.com, Twitter at HunnickFeedback, and of course Facebook, Hunnick Outcasts, and of course iTunes and Spreaker, Hunnick Outcast. Join us next time as we finish up this mythology with, yes, Street Fighter, because on a technicality, this video game franchise was going to have Jean-Claude Van Damme as its star. Now, Street Fighter came out in 1994, the movie anyway. I'm talking about the movies right now. And Mortal Kombat, the movie, came out in 95. Now, of course, we know in the early 90s, both video games were out. And at the time, we would have both video games next to each other. But I have Street Fighter as well on Blu-ray. Does it hold up? Well, you're going to be interested to hear what I have to say about that next week. And then, of course, on Mother's Day, we have a very special Mother's Day episode. So make sure everything is clean. No more wire hangers ever, because I'm going to be discussing the cult classic Mommy Dearest. And I cannot wait, because the audio commentary was by John Waters, and I thought this entire movie, Once Upon a Time, was a dream. And by a dream, I could not believe how fucked up that movie is. But it's going to be an interesting conversation. So, JT, thank you again for joining me, good sir.
Very welcome, sir. Have fun.
And, of course, for you listeners, thank you once again. The downloads are climbing, and once I reach either 3,000 downloads or 3,000 plays or 3,000 likes, whatever, when it reaches the number 3,000, I will be reviewing individually the Futurama DVD movies. So I got a lot going on in the next few weeks, and again, listeners, thank you for listening, but until next time, your souls are mine.
By the power of Grayskull, I command the Jawbridge. Open!
Yes, that's right. We have traveled to Eternia to enter Castle Grayskull. Join Optimus Solo and TF Joe and Mike as they find themselves telling tales of Eternia. We cover all things He-Man in this 45-episode-long podcast. You can find us on iTunes and www.geekassradio.com. By the power of Grayskull, we all have the power.
Emergency. Batman speaking. Warning all of you to brace yourselves for big news.
The biggest.
Tell them, Robin.
Holy superlatives, Batman. It's really exciting.
Greetings, citizens. Join me, your old bat chum, John S. Drew, on my journey to discover what it is I love about the classic 1966 Batman television series on the Batcave podcast. Each episode, I'm joined by a guest host as we review the classic television series. There's a new episode every 2 weeks. Same bat time, same bat channel on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at thebatcavepodcast.com.
Holy memoranda, folks. Make a note not to miss it.
Good thinking, Robin.